reading from Exodus chapter 18, starting at verse 13. We've been working through the book of Exodus, bringing out highlights from the story of the people of Israel. And we've got to a point where they are in the wilderness, and Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, comes to visit with the rest of Moses' family. And they look around, and they settle in, and they see all that God has done, and then it says this. The next day, Moses took his seat to serve as judge for the people, and they stood round him from morning till evening. When his father-in-law saw all that Moses was doing for the people, he said, "What is this you are doing for the people? Why do you sit alone as a judge, while all these people stand round you from morning till evening?" Moses answered him, "Because the people come to me to seek God's will. Whenever they have a dispute, it is brought to me, and I decide between the parties and inform them of God's decrees and instructions." Moses' father-in-law replied, "What you are doing is not good. You and these people who come to you will only wear yourselves out. The work is too heavy for you. You cannot handle it alone. Listen now to me, and I will give you some advice, and may God be with you. You must be the people's representative before God and bring their disputes to him. Teach them his decrees and instructions and show them the way they are to live and how they are to behave. But select capable men from all the people, men who fear God, trustworthy men who hate dishonest gain, and appoint them as officers over thousands, hundreds, fifties and tens. Let them serve as judges for the people at all times, but let them bring every difficult case to you, the simple cases they can decide themselves. That will make your load lighter, because they will share it with you. If you do this, and God so commands, you will be able to stand the strain, and all these people go home satisfied." Moses listened to his father-in-law and did everything he said. He chose capable men from all Israel and made them leaders of the people, officers over thousands, hundreds, fifties, and tens. They served as judges for the people at all times. The difficult cases they brought to Moses, but the simple ones they decided themselves. Then Moses sent his father-in-law on his way, and Jethro returned to his own country. As I say, we've been looking and preaching through the book of Exodus over the past few weeks. A book whose stories are dramatic and exciting and full of adventure. So far, as we've recapped before, we have heard about and passed through the burning bush where Moses first met God. We have seen the 10 plagues, the plagues of blood and frogs and gnats and flies and dying animals and hail and locusts and darkness and death. We've talked about the escape from Egypt, the wonderful things that God did. We've looked at the crossing of the Red Sea and the miracle that was performed. We've heard about the grumbling and moaning of the people of Israel while they're in the wilderness. So far we have had drama, excitement, miraculous events, danger, adventure, and peril. It has literally been one jaw-dropping moment after another. And now we get to our passage today. Possibly the most unexciting passage in this book. Possibly the most unadventurous thing that has happened to the people of Israel so far. After all the drama and excitement, we now have what it seems is administration. It feels a bit like Strictly Come Dancing after John Sargent has gone, doesn't it? You know, who wants to watch it now? When all the bad steps and the terrible dancing and the dragging the sack of potatoes has disappeared. Who wants to see plain old dancing anymore? After the most extraordinary excitement, in this passage we now have the most ordinary events. I bet you're really glad you came to church this morning, aren't you? Really glad you're visiting. Welcome again. Well, let's see about it. Here in Exodus 18, as we start the chapter, we find the Israelites are camped near Mount Sinai, where the Ten Commandments will soon be given to them. We find that, well, there's not much going on. There's no wars, there's no unusual hardship, there's no sea parting, there's no plagues, there's nothing. We find the Israelites simply getting on with living the wilderness life. And into this everyday wilderness life arrives Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, with his wife, Zipporah, and his children, Gershom and Elijah. Now, we don't know a lot about these people. We don't know a lot about Jethro, except that he is a priest of Midian. He's not a follower of the God of Israel. He doesn't believe in the God that Moses has followed. But he did welcome Moses when Moses fled from Egypt after killing the Egyptian way back in the beginning of the book. And he did look after Moses during the time that Moses was away from Egypt. And he did let Moses go back to Egypt to free the Israelites from slavery. And we know even less about Zipporah, Gershom and Elijah. They were with Moses when he went from Midian back to Egypt. But sometime between then and now, they have been sent back to Midian. We don't know how, we don't know when, we don't know where it happened. We don't know a lot about the history of Moses' family. But we do know why they return to Moses at this point in time in the Bible. Because the beginning verse of the chapter that I read says this. It says, Jethro had heard of everything God had done for Moses and for his people Israel, and how the Lord had brought Israel out of Egypt. You see, Jethro had heard of the wonderful adventures. He'd heard of the excitement, he'd heard of the danger, he'd heard of the drama, he'd heard of the miraculous acts of God that had taken place day after day for the people of Israel. And so he had turned up to see Moses and to find out more, to see what had been happening. He had heard how God had heard the pain of the Israelites in Egypt. He talked to Moses when he got there, and Moses told him how God had defeated the Egyptians, the great Egyptians who no one could defeat. God had defeated them. He heard how God had parted the Red Sea with his power. He heard how he had provided food for them in the desert when there was no food. He heard how he had enabled the Israelites to defeat their enemies while they were in the wilderness. Jethro heard when he arrived at the camp that the Israelites were at, how Almighty God had worked miracles to bring freedom to the people who were once slaves. And when he heard these things, the Bible says this, that Jethro, the man who didn't believe in God, brought a burnt offering and other sacrifices to God, and he ate bread with Moses and the elders in the presence of God. Or if you like, for the first time when Jethro heard the true stories of what God has done, he recognized that Moses' God was Almighty God, and he decided to worship him for himself. And then we move on through the passage, and Jethro gets to look around the camp of the Israelites. He gets to look at how the people of God live their lives. And you know, I can imagine he must have looked around with some anticipation. After hearing all those stories, the amazing things God had done, he must have looked around at these people who were once slaves, at these people who had found dramatic new freedom in God, at these people who had experienced things that people only dream of experiencing. And he must have imagined the wonderful life that they were now living. He must have anticipated that. But when he looked round, he didn't see that. Instead, he saw Moses taking his seat day after day after day to serve as judge for all the people who queued up to get to him from morning till evening. Instead, when he looked around at all these people who were free in God, he saw Moses on his own coming to seek God's will. Instead, he saw that whenever there was a dispute, people brought it to Moses, and Moses dealt with it, overloaded with the work of the people. You see, Jethro looked around at these people who had experienced the wonders of God, the mighty acts of God, and he saw that actually Moses, their leader, was worn out, and the people themselves were fed up. He looked around at these free people, and he realized that they didn't know how to live freely. He realized they didn't know how to make decisions. He realized they didn't know how to live this new life that God had given to them. He looked around at these free people of God and he saw that actually they weren't free at all. It reminds me a little of one of my favourite films, which is called The Shawshank Redemption. I don't know whether anyone has ever seen it. It's a great film, and it's a film, if you haven't seen it, about a man who is accused of murder wrongly and gets put in prison, and it's about the people that he meets, the things that he does, how he tries to clear his name, and how he eventually escapes and brings down the corrupt prison system with him. It's quite a clever film. But there's one man in this film who the person meets in prison, and he's called Brooks. And Brooks is an old man. He's been in prison for 50 years, for most of his life. And in prison, everyone respects Brooks because he's the oldest man there, he's been there forever, and he's the one that everyone looks up to. And during the course of the film, Brooks comes before the parole board. And the parole board decides that after 50 years in prison, it's time for Brooks to be released. And so they say, "You're free to go." And Brooks is terrified because he doesn't know what to do. So he tries to kidnap and hurt another prisoner so they'll keep him in prison because he doesn't want to go. He's been there 50 years. This is his life. But they decide Brooks has got to go free. And so you see Brooks packing up his stuff. Everyone's saying goodbye to him. He goes out of the prison and you watch him change. Brooks, the man who was respected in prison, the one who everyone looked up to, suddenly becomes an old man who doesn't fit into the world. You see him walking about on the streets and cars going past, cars he hasn't seen, and they're zooming past him and he's nearly getting run over. You see people barging him out of the way because he's an old man in the street. And Brooks writes back to the friends in prison and he says, "The world has gone and got itself into one big hurry. He can't cope with life outside of prison. He gets a job as a bag packer in a supermarket, but he can't pack the bags because he has arthritis in his hands and he can't do it quick enough. And while Brooks is free in the world, all he can think about is how to commit another crime so that he can go back in prison, because prison is where he belongs because he was there for 50 years. He can't sleep, he's terrified. And in the end, Brooks ends up committing suicide because he can't live a free life anymore. Brooks didn't know how to live in freedom because Brooks is, as we say, institutionalised, used to living in prison. And in the same way, the people of Israel don't know how to live in freedom either. They had become institutionalised as Egyptian slaves. They didn't know what to do with this new life that God had suddenly given them. Yes, they'd experienced dramatic events. Yes, they'd experienced a closeness of God in extreme danger. Yes, they'd experienced miracles that other people would never see. But they didn't know how to live with God in the everyday, ordinary, run-of-the-mill life that they now had. They simply didn't know how to live with God there. And it was causing them to be fed up and unhappy and unproductive. And so Jethro, in his wisdom as a Midianite priest that he had been for years, and in his role as father-in-law to Moses, gives some sound advice. And Moses listened to his father-in-law. And he did everything that his father-in-law said, which I have to say I find a little bit strange. I have a good relationship with my father-in-law, but I find that a little bit strange. And then Moses sent his father-in-law on his way, which I find altogether more believable. But the point is that up until now, the people of Israel only knew God as a God of the extraordinary, as a God who performed mighty wonders wherever they went. That's what happened. And maybe they only expected him to be a God of the extraordinary. But here, through Jethro, God shows them that he is also a God of the ordinary. That he also cares about the ordinary things that they have to do in everyday life. And you might say, well, actually, that's really good, isn't it? Because it's about time the Israelites learned about ordinary things. They've had all this drama. It's about time God taught them that life is ordinary. It's a good lesson for them to learn. But, you know, I often wonder if it's something that we need to learn as well. You know, I wonder if we're really, really aware that God is just as interested in the mundane, ordinary things we do as he is in the extraordinary things that happen now and again. You know, it reminds me of a game I used to play when I was little, a board game called Mousetrap. Anyone played Mousetrap? Yeah. You see, and the thing about Mousetrap is, you know, when you're little, you never actually really play the game. You just set up the mousetrap, and you keep setting it off so that the mouse gets caught. Oh, how exciting, the diver's diving into the pot. And you set it off again. And that's all you do. But actually, I discovered when I was older that it is a real game. That you have a dice, and you're supposed to go round the board and land on a space and set a piece up. And go around and land on a space and set another piece up. And it's actually a game. And miss a go, and all that. And I thought, you know, how dull is that? Don't play the game. You just want to set up the mouse trap and see it go and catch the mouse. You just want to get to the exciting bit. None of us ever played the game as children. We just set up the mouse trap and let it go again and again and again, because that's the excitement. And you know, I thought, in a way, you know, life is like that today as well, isn't it? It's like in the world, and some degree in the church as well, we're always waiting for the exciting bit. For the thing that's good. We don't want to do the everyday. We're always waiting for the exciting bit. You know, we have the lotto twice a week now, and we have scratch cards, just in case, you know, we can't get to the twice a week bit. We have telephones that, you know, play films and all that. I don't really understand. We have high-definition TV. You know, it's brilliant, isn't it? We have live television that you can pause and rewind. I mean, I love that. Simon does it all the time, don't he? We have Formula One races that happen at night as well as in the daytime. We have to add more excitement. We have $1 million cricket matches. It's got to be more and more exciting. You know, we don't just have food. We have Marks and Spencer's food, don't we? Oh, wonderful. You know, we don't just have Cadbury's adverts. We have a gorilla that plays the drums. I mean, how exciting is that? Just makes you want to get a chocolate bar. We don't just have recliner seats in aeroplanes. We have beds. Our own little cabin beds. Are you going on one of those, Nick, when you're travelling to China? Oh, disappointing. You know, we're not happy, it seems, to live life in the ordinary. We're only happy to live life for the excitement that is around the corner. And it can be similar in the church as well. We don't just have ordinary churches, we have mega churches. You know, we have mega services, we have mega Christian events. We have the latest Christian book, which is also accompanied by the journal and the picture frame and the desk tidy. We have all sorts of things to make it more exciting. We don't just want to meet with God, we want it to be dramatic every time. We don't just want to be in his presence, we want physical displays of him all over. We don't just want to live with God, we want a spiritual high and another spiritual high and another spiritual high. For some reason, we seem to have it in our heads that God can only really work if it's dramatic. Or that God is only really there if our lives are in terrible trouble. You could say we have become institutionalised by the world around. Institutionalised into getting through the ordinary so we can reach the exciting event. And because of this, when we're at church and when we're following God, we can often feel fed up. Unhappy, worn out, unproductive. It makes me wonder whether actually, just like the Israelites, we don't really know how to live with God in the everyday, ordinary, run-of-the-mill life which most of us lead most of the time. We don't know how to recognise God there. Now, you know, please don't get me wrong. Excitement is good. I haven't got a problem with excitement. You know, I look forward to things, and I love excitement, and I love drama, and I love it when things like that happen. But, you know, the majority of our lives are lived in the ordinary, in the run-of-the-mill of every day. And, you know, the God I know, yes, is an exciting God. And the God I know is a God of miracles. And the God I know is a God of drama. And I want to see all of that. But the God I know is also a God of the ordinary. The God I know is a God of everyday life. A God who cares deeply about what we go through in an ordinary day. A God who cares deeply about whether we're overwhelmed or underwhelmed. A God who cares deeply about the simple things that we face in everyday life. A God who cares deeply how we feel when no one else is around. The God I know is the God that Jethro made known to the people of Israel in this passage. He's the God of the ordinary, as well as the God of the extraordinary. I just want to finish with this. I'm going to finish because I can see, it's getting a bit chilly, isn't it? One person that I admire most in my life, it's not David Beckham, although, you know, close, is actually my grandma. My grandma died a few years ago. She was 91 years old. And she's a woman that I admire most and the person that I would want to be like most in my life. My grandma was born in a village in Yorkshire and she lived there for the whole of her life, a little village called Earby. And she went to that same church for the whole of her life. She played the organ there for 75 years, week in, week out, never complaining, going down, playing the organ. She never went out of her village in Earby, only to do odd shopping trips. The only time she really travelled was when she came to London just a few years before she died to visit me. She didn't go abroad. She didn't do any of those exciting, dramatic things. She didn't do any of that. She lived in the same village and did the same things. People would say she lived a bit of a dull life. She missed out on the drama and the excitement of all she could have seen. She never went on a boat, she never flew. I don't even know whether she went on a train. But you see, I admired my grandma because every single day she lived her life for God. Every single day she followed God in everything she was doing. At her funeral, the minister said that Elaine, that's her name, was essentially holy. And I sat there and I thought, my word, that's quite steep, isn't it? He said, I'd never heard Elaine say a bad word about anyone. And I got back after the service and I said to my mum, did you hear that? Never a bad word about anyone, you hear, right? And my mum said, no, she didn't, Kate. She lived her life following God. You wouldn't hear your grandma say a bad thing. And you know, I admire my grandma because she lived the most ordinary life in the eyes of everyone. But she lived it following the most extraordinary God every single moment of her life. And you know, in this most ordinary passage in the Bible, the people of Israel learned a valuable lesson. That if they were to follow God in the most extraordinary events that happened, then they had to know how to follow him in the most ordinary events as well. And you know, I don't believe that that lesson has changed today in Cottenham in 2008. Because, you know, I believe that if we too desire to meet our amazing, extraordinary, wonderful God in the most amazing ways, then we first of all need to be a people who know and are committed to following him in the most ordinary ways as well. Let's pray together.